and he shivered as she turned her head and kissed his palm. "I have never been able to deny you, Arthas," she said, a hint of laughter in her voice. "And yes, it feels incomplete to me, too. I've missed you very much." Relief washed over him, and he leaned forward, wrapping her in his arms and kissing her passionately. They would get to the bottom of this mystery together, solve it, and come home heroes. Then they'd get married, maybe in the spring. He wanted to see her showered with rose petals. And later, there'd be those fair-haired children Jaina had talked about. They were not intimate, not here, surrounded as they were by Arthas's men. But he did join her under the blankets until the steely dawn called him reluctantly back to his own bed. Before he left, though, he caught her in his arms and held her tightly. He did sleep a little then, secure in the knowledge that nothing, no plague, no demon, no mystery, could stand up to the joint efforts of Prince Arthas Menethil, Paladin of the Light, and Lady Jaina Proudmore, Mage. They'd see it through, together, whatever it took. Chapter 10. By mid-morning the next day, they were starting to come across scattered farmsteads. "The village isn't too far distant," Arthas said, consulting the map. "None of these farms is mentioned here." "Nay," said Thalric firmly. There was a degree of familiarity in how he spoke to his prince, due to how long the two had known each other. Arthas had come to rely on the man's forthrightness, and Falric had been first on the list of those he wanted to accompany him. Now Falric shook his graying head. "I grew up in this area, sir, and most of these farmers are the independent sort. They bring their produce and livestock into the villages, sell it, and come home."
"Bad blood?"
"Not at all, Your Highness. It's just the way things are done."
"If that is the relationship," Jaina said, "then if someone fell ill, they might not summon outside aid. These people could be sick."
"Jaina raises a good point. Let's go see what we can find out from these farmers," Arthas ordered, clucking to his mount. They approached slowly, giving the farmers time to notice and prepare for them. If they were isolationists, and if the plague had indeed cut a swathe through here, the farmers would be wary of large parties sweeping down on them. Arthas's eyes scanned the area as they approached the farmhouse. "Look," he said, pointing. "The gate's been smashed, and the livestock is gone."
"That's not a good sign," Jaina muttered.
"Nor has anyone come out to greet us," Falric said, "or even to challenge us."
Arthas and Jaina exchanged glances. Arthas signaled the group to halt.
"Greetings to you all," he said in a strong voice. "I am Arthas, Prince of Lordaeron, and my men and I mean you no harm. Please, come out and speak with us. We have questions concerning your safety."
Silence. The wind picked up, flattening the acres of grass that should have been grazing ground for cattle or sheep. The only sound was its soft sigh and the creaking of their own armor as they all shifted uneasily.
"No one's here," Arthas said.
"Or maybe they're too sick to come out," Jaina replied.
"Arthas, we must at least go and see. They could need our help."
Arthas glanced at his men. They looked none too keen on walking into a house that might be infested with plague victims, nor in truth was he. But Jaina was right. These were his people. He had vowed to help them. And so he would, wherever that promise led, whatever it took.
"Come on," he said, and swung down. Beside him, Jaina did the same.
"No, you stay here." Her golden brows drew together in a frown. "I told you, I'm not a fragile little figurine, Arthas. I was sent to investigate the plague, and if there are indeed victims here, I need to see them for myself."
He sighed and nodded. "All right, then." He strode forward to the farmhouse.
They were almost at the garden when the wind shifted. The stench was horrific. Jaina covered her mouth, and even Arthas struggled not to gag. It was the sickly, sweet smell of the slaughterhouse. No, not even that fresh. It was the reek of carrion. One of his men turned and vomited. It was by sheer will that Arthas did not emulate him. The foul odor was coming from inside the house. It was by now obvious what had happened to the inhabitants. Jaina turned to him, pale but resolute. I have to examine. Horrible, liquid-sounding cries filled the air, along with the stench of death, as from inside the farmhouse and behind it, things came at them with startling speed. Arthas's hammer suddenly began to glow with a light so bright he had to narrow his eyes against it. He whirled, lifting the hammer, and stared straight into the eye sockets of a walking nightmare. It wore a rough shirt and overalls, and its weapon was a pitchfork. Once, it had been a farmer, but that had been back when it had been alive. It was obviously dead now, the gray-green flesh sloughing off its skeleton, its rotting fingers leaving smudged bits on the pitchfork handle. Black, congealed fluids oozed from pustules, and its gurgling roar spat flecks of ichor on Arthas's unprotected face. So shocked was he by the apparition that he barely had time to swing the hammer before it jabbed him with the pitchfork. He got his blessed weapon up just in time, knocking the farming implement from the hands of the walking dead man and bringing the radiant hammer crashing into its torso. The thing went sprawling and did not rise. But others came to take its place. Arthas heard the thwomp and telltale crackling of Jaina's firebolts, and then suddenly another smell was added to the sickly miasma, the odor of burning flesh. All around him, he heard the sound of weapons clashing, men screaming battle cries, the crackle of flame. One of the corpses stumbled distractedly into the house, its body and clothing ablaze. A few moments later, smoke began to billow from the open door. That was it.
Everyone, get out now, Arthas cried. Jaina, burn the farmhouse. Burn it to the ground.
Despite the horror and panic that was racing through his men, trained soldiers, all of them, but not trained for this, his orders were heard. The men turned and ran from the house. Arthas looked over at Jaina. Her mouth was set in a grim line. Her eyes were fastened on the house, and fire crackled as comfortably in her small hands as if the flames were innocuous as flowers. A huge fireball as big as a man exploded into the house. It burst into flame, and Arthas lifted his hand to shield his face from the blast. Several of the animated corpses had been trapped inside. For a moment, Arthas stared at the conflagration, unable to tear his eyes from it. Then he forced himself to turn his attention to slaughtering those that had not been caught in the pyre. It was the work of a few more moments, and then all the things were dead. Really dead, this time. For a long moment, there was silence, except for the crackling sound of flames consuming the burning house. With a slow sigh, the building collapsed. Arthas was glad he could not see the corpses as they were turned to ash. He caught his breath and turned to Jaina. What? She swallowed hard. Her face was black with soot, save where streams of sweat had cleared a path. They are called undead. Light preserve us, Falric muttered, his eyes bulging and his face pale. I'd thought things like this were just stories to scare children. No, they're real enough, all right. I've never seen one. Never expected to. She took a deep breath and calmed herself, getting her voice under control. The dead sometimes do linger on, if their deaths were traumatic. It's what gave rise to ghost stories. Her demeanor was calming after the horror. Arthas noticed his men turning to listen to her, eager for some understanding of what the hell had just happened to them. He, too, was more grateful for her book learning than he could ever recall being before. The animation of corpses by powerful individual necromancers is not unheard of. We saw examples of this in both the First War, when the orcs were able to animate skeletal remains, and in the Second, with the appearance of what would come to be known as Death Knights. Jaina went on, as if she were reciting a passage rather than trying to explain a horror that the mind could barely grasp. But as I say, I've never seen any of them before.
Well, they're really dead now, one of the men said.
Arthas gave him an encouraging smile.
We have your swords, the light, and Lady Jaina's fire to thank for that, he told them.
Arthas, Jaina said, a moment? They walked away a little bit while the men began to clean themselves up and recover from the unnerving encounter.
I think I know what you're going to say, Arthas began. You were sent here to see if this plague was magical in nature, and it's starting to look like it is. Necromantic magic.
Jaina nodded wordlessly. Arthas glanced over at his men.
We haven't even hit the main villages yet. I have a feeling we're going to see more of these undead.
Jaina grimaced. I have a feeling you're right. As they departed the cluster of farmsteads, Jaina drew her horse up and paused.
What are you looking at?
Arthas stepped beside her. Jaina pointed. He followed her gaze to see a silo standing alone on a hill.
The granary?
She shook her head.
No. The land around it.
She dismounted, knelt, and touched the soil, scooping up a handful of dry dirt and dead grass. She examined it, poking at a small insect, its six legs curled up in death, then sifted the dirt through her fingers as the slight wind took the powdery soil and bore it away in a little puff of dust.
It's as if the land around that granary is dying.
Arthas glanced from her hand to the earth. She was completely right, he realized. Several yards behind him, the grass was green and healthy, the soil, presumably, still rich and fertile. But beneath his feet, and in the area around the granary, it was as dead as if it were the middle of winter. No, that wasn't a good analogy. Winter was when the land slept. There was still life in it, dormant, but ready to be awakened when spring came. There was no life here. He stared at the granary, sea-green eyes narrowing.
What could have caused this?
I'm not sure. It reminds me of what happened with the dark portal in the blasted lands. When the portal was opened, the demonic energies that sapped the life from Draenor spilled through into Azeroth, and the land around the portal died, Arthas finished. A thought struck him.
Jaina, could the grain itself be plagued, carrying this demonic energy?
Her eyes widened.
Let's hope not.
She pointed at the crates the men were hauling out of the granary.
Those crates bear the regional seal of Anderhal, the distribution center for the northern boroughs. If this grain can spread the plague, there's no telling how many villages might be infected.
She almost whispered the words, looking wan and sick. He stared at her hands, pale with the dust of the dead land. Fear suddenly shot through Arthas, and he grabbed her hand. Closing his eyes, he murmured a prayer. Warm light filled him, spread from his hand to hers. Jaina glanced at him, confused, then down at her own hand clasped in his gloved one. Her eyes widened with horror, as what she only now realized could have been a very narrow escape.
Thank you, she whispered.
He gave her a shaky grin, then called out to his men.
Gloves! Every man here wears gloves in this area.
No exceptions.
His captain heard him and nodded, repeating the order. Most of the men were in full armor and so were already wearing gauntlets.
Arthas shook his head, dispelling the worry that still clung to him. He had sensed no sickness in Jaina at all.
Thank the light. He pressed her hand to his lips. Jaina moved, blushed, and smiled softly.
That was foolish of me. I wasn't thinking. Lucky for you, I was.
A reversal of our roles, she said wryly, offering him a grin and kiss to take the sting out of the jibe. Their mission was now clear, to find and destroy any infected granaries they could. Their task was aided the following day, when Arthas's troops crossed paths with a pair of Quel'Dorei priests. They too had begun to sense the wrongness that was starting to creep through the land, and had come to offer what healing they could. They offered more tangible help as well. They were able to direct Arthas toward a warehouse at the far end of the village they were approaching.
There are some houses up ahead, sir, Falric said.
Well then, Arthas said, let's—
A sudden boom took him completely by surprise, and his horse reared, spooked.
What the— He looked in the direction from which the sounds had come. Small shapes, barely visible, but there was no mistaking the noise.
That's mortar fire. Come on!
He regained control of his horse, yanked its head around, and galloped toward the sound. Several dwarves looked up as they approached, as surprised to see Arthas as he was to see them. He wheeled to a halt.
What the hell are you shooting at?
We're blasting those damn skeletons. This whole flaming village is crawling with them.
A chill ran up Arthas's spine. He could see them now, the by now too familiar figures of undead shuffling with their unmistakable gait closing the distance.
Fire!
Cried the leader of the dwarves, and several skeletons were blown into bones that flew in several directions.
Well, I could use your help, Arthas said. We've got a warehouse to destroy at the end of town.
The dwarf turned to him, brown eyes wide.
A warehouse? He echoed in disbelief. We're being set upon by the walking dead, and you're fretting about a warehouse?
Arthas had no time for this.
What's in the warehouse is killing these people, he snapped, pointing at the remains of the skeletons. And when they die...
The dwarf's eyes widened.
Ugh, I ken you knew. Lads, move up! We're to be helping this bonny boy's troops!
He peered up at Arthas.
By the way, who exactly are ye, bonny boy?
Even in the midst of the horror, the offhanded nature of the question made Arthas grin. Prince Arthas Menethil, and you are. The dwarf gaped for just an instant, then quickly recovered.
Dargal, at your service, your highness.
Arthas did not waste further breath on pleasantries, instead attempting to calm his steed sufficiently to keep up with the now moving unit. The horse was a charger, bred for battle, and while it had not given him a moment's trouble while he was fighting orcs, it clearly did not like the scent of the undead in its nostrils. He couldn't blame it, but its skittishness made him think of Invincible's great heart and utter lack of fear. He forced the thought away. It was a distraction. He needed to focus, not mourn a beast even more surely dead than the lumbering corpses that were being blown to bits. Jaina and his men fell in behind him, catching those who weren't quite destroyed by mortar fire and those who stumbled in from the sides and behind him. Energy filled him, flowed through him, as he swung his hammer tirelessly. He was grateful for Dargal's timely arrival. There were so very many of these undead things. He was not sure his troops could handle them all. The combined units of humans and dwarves made slow but inexorable progression toward the granary. The undead came more thickly as they approached, and by the time they saw silos looming in the distance, there were still more. He leaped from his unhappy mount and charged into their midst, gripping his hammer that glowed with the power of the light.
Now that the initial shock and horror had passed, Arthas found that slaughtering these monstrosities was even better than killing orcs. Maybe the orcs, as Jaina had said, were indeed people, were individuals. These things were nothing more than corpses, jerking around like marionettes, activated by some twisted necromantic puppeteer. They fell like puppets with the strings cut, too, and he smiled fiercely as two undead toppled from the same broad, sweeping blow of the mighty weapon. These had been dead longer, it seemed. The stench around them was not so ripe, and the bodies were almost more mummified than decaying. Several of them, like those of the first wave, were nothing more than skeletons, bits of clothing or makeshift armor on their bony frames, as they rattled toward Arthas and his men. The acrid odor of burning flesh assaulted his nostrils and he grinned, grateful again for Jaina's presence, and he still fought on. He glanced about, panting. Thus far, he had lost not a single man, and Jaina, though pale with exertion, was unharmed. Arthas! Jaina's voice, strong and clear, pierced through the din. Arthas dispatched the carcass that was attempting to decapitate him with a scythe, and in the brief pause that afforded him, glanced at her. She was pointing up ahead, preparatory fire already glowing in her palms and limning her fingers. Look! He turned his gaze to where she was pointing, and his eyes narrowed. Up ahead was a cluster of humans, obviously living humans, judging by their movements, clad in black. They were gesturing, casting or pointing, clearly directing the movements of the waves of undead that were being hurled at them now. "Over there! Target them!" Arthas cried. The cannons were swung around, and his men charged, hacking their way through the undead, their eyes fixed upon the living men in black robes. "We've got you now," Arthas thought, with savage delight. But as soon as they came under fire directly, the men ceased their activities. The undead they had been controlling suddenly halted, still animated, but no longer directed. They were easy marks for the dwarven mortar fire and Arthas's men, who cut them down with single blows and pushed forward. The Magi gathered together, and a few of them began casting, their hands fluttering. And Arthas recognized the familiar image of whirling space that indicated they were attempting to create a portal. "No! Don't let them escape!" he cried, slamming his hammer into the chest of a skeleton, bringing it back around in an arc to cave in the head of a shuffling zombie. From the light only knew where, the wizard summoned more of the walking dead. Skeletons, rotting corpses, and something that was huge and pale and had altogether too many limbs. Across its maggoty white, glistening torso, it sported stitches as wide as Arthas's hand, looking like a disturbed child's idea of a rag doll. It towered above the others, ghastly weapons clutched in its three hands, and fixed Arthas with a single working eye. Jaina had somehow appeared by his side and cried, "By the light! That creature looks like it was sewn together from different corpses. Let's study it after we kill it, okay?" Arthas shot back and charged. The abominable experiment approached, uttering guttural noises, and swinging an axe as big as Arthas was tall. He leaped out of the way, rolling and springing lightly back up on his feet to charge the monstrosity from behind. Three of his men, two with pole arms, did the same, and the hideous thing was quickly dispatched. Even as he battled fiercely, he watched the Magi out of the corner of his eye as they turned and rushed through their portal. And then they were gone. The undead they had abandoned all stopped in their tracks, undirected corpses that were quickly destroyed. "Damn it!" Arthas cried. A hand fell on his arm, and he jerked it back, his features softening slightly as he saw it was Jaina. He wasn't in the mood for comforting or explanations, and he had to do something, anything, to compensate for the men in black robes vanishing on him.
Destroy that warehouse, now!
Aye, your highness. Let's go, lads!
The dwarves surged forward, as eager as he to seize some kind of victory. The cannons rolled over the dead men and the dead soil until they were within range.
Fire!
Dargal cried. As one, the cannons roared, and Arthas felt a hot surge of pleasure as the granary crumbled beneath the assault.
Jaina, burn what's left of it.
She was already lifting her hands before he started speaking. They did work well together, he thought. An enormous ball of crackling flame sprang from her hands, and the granary and its contents ignited immediately. They waited, watching it burn, so that the fire did not spread. With the land so desiccated, a fire could quickly get out of control. Arthas ran a hand through his sweat-stiff blonde hair. The heat coming off the burning granary was oppressive, and he yearned for a breeze. He walked away a short distance and prodded the fallen pale thing with a plated boot. His foot sank into the soft flesh, and he wrinkled his nose. Jaina followed him. Upon closer examination, it looked like she had been right, that the thing was indeed cobbled together out of other body parts. Arthas suppressed a shudder. The Magi, dressed in black. I'm afraid they were necromancers, Jaina said, just like we discussed earlier.
What new?
Dargal had come up behind them and was eyeing the fallen abomination with disgust on his face. Necromancers, magi who have dabbled in dark magic, who can raise and control the dead. Obviously, they and whomever they serve are behind this plague. She lifted her serious blue eyes to Arthas. Demonic energy may be involved, but I think it's clear that we started down the wrong path. Necromancers. Creating a plague to get more raw material for their unholy army, Arthas murmured, glancing back toward the now smoking ruins of the granary.
I want them. No, I want their leader.
His gauntleted fists clenched.
I want that bastard who is deliberately slaughtering my people.
He thought about the crates they had seen earlier, and the seal they bore. He lifted his eyes and looked down the road.
And it's a good bet that we'll find him, and the answers we're looking for, in Anderhall.
Chapter 11 Arthas was pushing his men too hard, and he knew it. But time was a precious resource and could not be squandered. He felt a tug of guilt when he saw Jaina chewing on some dried meat as they rode. The light refreshed him when he worked with it. Magi drew on different energies, and he knew that Jaina was exhausted after the superb effort she had put forth earlier. But there was no time for rest, not when thousands of lives depended upon their actions. He'd been sent on a mission to find out what was going on and stop it. The mystery was starting to unravel, but he was beginning to doubt his ability to halt the plague. Nothing was as easy as it had looked at first. Still, Arthas would not give up, could not give up. He had vowed to do whatever it took to stop this, to save his people, and so he would. They saw and smelled the smoke rising in the sky before they reached the gates of Anderhall. Arthas hoped that if the town had burned, then maybe at least the grain had been destroyed as well, and then felt a twinge of guilt at the callousness of the thought. He buried it in action, kicking his mount hard and riding through the gates, expecting to be assaulted at any moment. Around them, buildings burned, black smoke stinging his eyes and making him cough. Through tear-filled eyes, he peered around. There were no villagers, but neither were there any undead. What was?
I believe you have come looking for me, children, came a smooth voice.
The wind shifted, driving the smoke in a different direction, and Arthas could now see a black-robed figure standing only a short distance away. Arthas tensed. This, then, was the leader. The necromancer was smiling now, his face dimly glimpsed in the shadow of his hood, a smirk that Arthas burned to cut off his face. Beside him were two of his pet undead.
You found me.
I am Kel'Thuzad. Jaina gasped in recognition at the name, and her hand flew to her mouth. Arthas spared her a quick glance, then returned his full attention to the speaker. He gripped his hammer tightly.
I've come to deliver a warning, said the necromancer. Leave well enough alone. Your curiosity will be the death of you.
I thought this magic taint felt familiar. It was Jaina, her voice shaking with outrage.
You were disgraced, Kel'Thuzad, precisely for your experiments along this line. We told you it would lead to disaster, and you have learned nothing.
Lady Jaina Proudmore, Kel'Thuzad purred. Looks like Antonidas's little apprentice is all grown up.
And quite the contrary, my dear. As you can see, I have learned a great deal.
I saw the rats you experimented with, Jaina cried. That was bad enough. But now you
have furthered my research and perfected it, Kel'Thuzad answered.
Are you responsible for this plague, necromancer? Arthas shouted. Is this cult your doing?
Kel'Thuzad turned to him, his eyes glittering in the shadow of his cowl. I ordered the cult of the damned to distribute the plagued grain. But the sole credit is not mine.
Before Arthas could speak, Jaina had burst out. What do you mean?
I serve the Dreadlord Mal'Ganis. He commands the scourge that will cleanse this land and establish a paradise of eternal darkness.
A chill swept over Arthas, despite the heat of the surrounding fires, at the tone of the man's voice. He did not know what a dreadlord was, but the meaning of scourge was clear.
And what exactly is this scourge meant to cleanse?
The thin-lipped mouth beneath the white mustache again curled in a cruel smile.
Why, the living, of course.
His plan is already in motion.
Seek him out at Stratholm, if you need further proof.
Arthas had had enough of teasing hints and taunts. He growled, gripped the haft of his hammer, and charged forward.
For the light! He cried.
Kel'Thuzad had not moved. He stood his ground. Then, at the last minute, the air around him twisted and puckered, and he was gone. The two creatures who had stood silently at his sides now clamped their arms on Arthas, trying to wrestle him down to the earth, their fetid stench vying with the smell of smoke to choke him. He twisted free, landing a strong, clean blow to the head of one of them. Its skull shattered like a fragile piece of blown glass, brains spattering the earth as it collapsed. The second was as easily dealt with.
The granary, he cried, running to his horse and leaping atop it. Come on!
The others mounted up, and they charged down the main path through the burning village. The granaries loomed up ahead of them. They were untouched by the fire that seemed to be racing through the rest of Anderhall. Arthas drew his horse up sharply and leaped off it, running as fast as he could toward the buildings. He pulled open the door, hoping desperately to see crates piled high. Grief and rage swept through him, as the only thing to meet his gaze were empty chambers, empty save for small, scattered bits of grain and the corpses of rats on the floor. He stared, sick, for a moment, then raced to the next one, and the next, yanking the doors open, even though he knew exactly what he would find. They were all empty, and had been for some time, if the layers of dust on the floor and the spiderwebs in the corners were any indication. The shipments have already been sent out, he said brokenly as Jaina stepped up beside him. We're too late. He slammed his gauntleted fist into the wooden door and Jaina jumped. Damn it!
Arthas, we did the best we...
He whirled on her furiously. I'm going to find him. I'm going to find that undead loving bastard and rip him limb from limb for this. Let him get someone to sew him back together. He stormed out, shaking. He'd failed. He'd had the man right there, and he'd failed. The grain had been sent out, and Light alone knew how many people would die because of that. Because of him. No. He was not going to let that happen. He would protect his people. He would die to protect them. Arthas clenched his fists. North, he said to the men who trailed behind him, unaccustomed to seeing their generally good-natured prince in the grip of such fury. That's the next place he'll go. Let's exterminate him, like the vermin he is. He rode like a man possessed, galloping north, almost absently slaughtering the shambling wrecks of human beings who attempted to stop him. He was no longer moved by the horror of it all. His mind's eye was filled with the vision of the man manipulating it and the disgusting cult that perpetrated it. The dead would rest soon enough. Arthas had to ensure that no more would be made. At one point, there was a huge cluster of the undead. Rotting heads lifted as one, turning toward Arthas and his men, and they moved toward him. Arthas cried out, "For the light!" kicked his steed and charged in among them, swinging his hammer and crying out incoherently, venting his anger and frustration on these, the perfect targets. At one point, there was a lull, and he was able to look around. Safe and secure, away from the field of battle, overseeing everything while risking nothing, stood a tall figure in a fluttering black cloak, as if waiting for them. Kel'Thuzad.
There! He cried. He's there!
Jaina and his men followed him, Jaina blasting clear passage with fireball after fireball, and his men hacking the undead that did not fall in the first round of attacks. Arthas felt righteous fury singing in his veins as he drew closer and closer to the necromancer. His hammer rose and fell, seemingly effortlessly, and he didn't even see those he struck down. His eyes were fixed on the man, if you could even call such a monster that, responsible for everything in the first place. Cut off the head, and the beast would die. Then Arthas was there. A bellow of raw fury exploded from him, and he swung, sweeping his brilliantly glowing hammer parallel to the ground, striking Kel'Thuzad at the knees and sending him flying. Others pressed in, swords slicing and hacking, the men venting their grief and outrage on the source, the cause of the entire disaster. For all his power and magic, it seemed as though Kel'Thuzad could indeed die like any other man. Both legs were shattered by Arthas's sweeping blow and lay at odd angles. His robes were wet with blood, shiny black against a matte black, and red trickled from his mouth. He propped himself up on his arms and tried to speak, spitting out blood and teeth. He tried again.
Naive. Fool, he managed, swallowing. My death will make little difference in the long run. For now, the scourging of this land begins.
His elbows buckled, and, eyes closing, he fell. The body began to rot immediately. Decomposition that should have taken days happened in mere seconds. The flesh paling, bloating, bursting open. The men gasped and started back, covering their noses and mouths. Some of them turned and vomited from the stench. Arthas stared, horrified and enraptured at the same time, unable to look away. Fluids gushed from the corpse, the flesh taking on a creamy consistency and turning black. The unnatural decomposition slowed, and Arthas turned away, gasping for fresh air. Jaina was deathly pale, with dark circles around her wide, shocked eyes. Arthas went to her and turned her away from the disgusting image. "What happened to him?" he asked quietly. Jaina swallowed, trying to calm herself. Again, she seemed to find strength in her detachment. "It is believed that, if necromancers are not perfectly precise in their magical workings, that, if they are killed, they are subject to..." Her voice trailed off, and suddenly she was a young woman, looking sickened and shocked. "That..." "Come on," Arthas said gently. "Let's get to Hearthglen. They need to be warned, if we're not too late already." They left the body where it had fallen, not granting it another glance. Arthas said a silent prayer to the light that they were not too late. He did not know what he would do if he failed again. Jaina was exhausted. She knew that Arthas wanted to make the best time possible, and she shared his concern. Lives were at stake. So when he asked her if she could go through the night without stopping, she nodded. They had been riding hard for 4 hours when she found herself half off her mount. She was so bone-weary, she'd fallen unconscious for a few seconds. Fear shot through her, and she grabbed onto the horse's mane wildly, pulling herself back up into the saddle and yanking on the reins so the horse would stop. She sat there, the reins clutched in her hands, trembling, for several minutes, before Arthas realized she'd fallen behind. Dimly, she heard him calling a halt. She looked up at him mutely as he cantered up to her. "Jaina, what's wrong?"
I'm sorry, Arthas. I know you want to make good time, and so do I, but I was so tired I almost fell off. Could we stop for just a little while?"
She saw the concern for her and frustration at the situation warring on his face, even in the dim light. "How long do you think you'll need?" "A couple of days," she wanted to say. But instead, she said, "Just long enough to eat something and rest for a bit." He nodded, reaching up to her and helping her off the horse. He bore her to the side of the road where he set her down gently. Jaina fished in her pack for some cheese with hands that trembled. She expected him to head off and talk to the men, but instead he sat down beside her. Impatience radiated from him like heat from a fire. She took a bite of cheese and looked up at him as she chewed, analyzing his profile in the starlight. One of the things she most loved about Arthas was how accessible, how human and emotional he was to her. But now, while he was certainly in the grip of powerful emotions, he felt distant, as if he was 100 miles away. Impulsively, she reached a hand to touch his face. He started at her touch, as if he had forgotten she was there, then smiled thinly at her. "Done?" he asked. Jaina thought about the single bite she had eaten.
"No," she said, "but Arthas, I'm worried about you. I don't like what this is doing to you."
"Doing to me?" he snapped. "What about what it's doing to the villagers? They're dying and then getting turned into corpses, Jaina. I have to stop it. I have to."
"Of course we do, and I'll do everything I can to help. You know that. But I've never seen you hate anything like this."
He laughed, a short, harsh bark.
"You want me to love necromancers?"
She frowned.
"Arthas, don't twist my words like that. You're a paladin, a servant of the light. You're a healer as much as a warrior, but all I see in you is this desire to wipe out the enemy.
They're starting to sound like Uther. Jaina didn't reply. She was so weary, it was difficult to compose her thoughts. She took another bite of cheese, focusing on getting the badly needed nourishment into her body. For some reason, it was hard for her to swallow.
Jaina, I just want innocent people to stop dying. That's all.
And I admit, I'm upset that I can't seem to make that happen. But once this is over, you'll see. Everything will be fine again. I promise. He smiled down at her, and for a moment, she saw the old Arthas in his handsome face. She smiled back, in what she hoped was a reassuring fashion. Are you done now? Two bites. Jaina put the rest of the cheese away.
Yes, I'm done. Let's keep going.
The sky was turning from black to the ashy gray of dawn when they first heard the gunfire. Arthas's heart sank. He spurred his horse as they wound their way north up the long road that cut through the deceptively pleasant hills. Just outside the gates of Hearthglen, they saw several men and dwarves armed with rifles, all trained on them. Wafted to him on the light breeze, mixed in with the smell of gunpowder, was the incongruously pleasant, slightly sweet scent of baking bread.
"Hold your fire!" Arthas cried as his troops galloped up. He drew rein so hard his mount reared in startlement. "I am Prince Arthas. What's going on? Why are you so armed?"
They lowered their rifles, clearly surprised to see their prince standing right in front of them.
"Sir, you won't believe what's been going on."
"Try me," Arthas said. Arthas was not surprised to hear the initial words, that the dead had risen and were attacking. What did surprise him was the term vast army. He glanced at Jaina. She looked utterly exhausted. The little break they had taken last night obviously hadn't been sufficient to restore her.
"Sir," cried one of the scouts, rushing in, "the army! It's heading this way!"
"Damn it," Arthas muttered. This small group of men and dwarves could handle a skirmish well enough, but not a whole damned army of the things. He made a decision. "Jaina, I'll stay here to protect the village. Go as quickly as you can and tell Lord Uther what's happened."
"But..."
"Go, Jaina! Every second counts." She nodded. Light bless her and that level head of hers. He spared her a smile of gratitude before she stepped through the portal she created and disappeared.
"Sir," said Falric, and something in the tone of his voice made Arthas turn, "you'd better take a look at this."
Arthas followed the man's gaze, and his heart sank. Empty crates, bearing the mark of Anderhal. Hoping against hope that he was wrong, Arthas asked in a voice that shook slightly, "What did those crates contain?" One of the Hearthglen men looked at him, puzzled.
"Just a grain shipment from Anderhal. There's no need to worry, my lord. It's already been distributed among the villagers. We've had plenty of bread."
That was the smell. Not the typical smell of baking bread, but slightly off, slightly too sweet, and then Arthas understood. He staggered, just a little, as the enormity of the situation, the true scope of its horror, burst over him. The grain had been distributed, and suddenly there was a vast army of the undead.
"Oh no," he whispered. They stared at him, and he tried again to speak, his voice still shaking. But this time, not with horror, but with fury. The plague was never meant to simply kill his people. No, no, it was much darker, much more twisted than that. It was meant to turn them into. Even as the thought formed, the man who had answered Arthas's question about the crate bent over double. Several others followed suit. A strange green glow limned their bodies, pulsing and growing stronger.
They clutched their stomachs and fell to the earth, blood erupting from their mouths, saturating their shirts. One of them stretched out a hand to him, imploring for healing. Instead, Arthas, repulsed, recoiled in horror, staring as the man writhed in pain and died in a matter of seconds. What had he done? The man had begged for healing, but Arthas had not even lifted a hand. But could this even be healed? Arthas wondered as he stared at the corpse. Could the light even...
Merciful light! Thalric cried. The bread!
Arthas started at the shout, coming out of his guilty trance. Bread, the staff of life, wholesome and nourishing, had now become worse than lethal. Arthas opened his mouth to cry out to warn his men, but his tongue was like clay in his mouth. The plague embedded into the grain acted even before the shocked prince could find words. The dead man's eyes opened. He lurched upright into a seated position. And that was how Kel'Thuzad had created an undead army in so astonishingly short a time. Insane laughter echoed in his ears. Kel'Thuzad, laughing maniacally, triumphant even in death. Arthas wondered if he was going mad from all he had been forced to bear witness to. The undead clambered to their feet, and their movement galvanized him to action and liberated his tongue.
"Defend yourselves!" Arthas cried, swinging his hammer before the man had a chance to rise.
Others were swifter, though, getting to dead feet, turning the weapons that in life they would have used to protect Arthas upon him. The only advantage he had was that the undead were not graceful with their weapons, and most of the shots they fired went wide. Arthas's men, meanwhile, attacked with hard eyes and grim faces, bashing skulls, decapitating, smashing what had been allies just a few moments earlier into submission.
"Prince Arthas! The undead forces have arrived!"
Arthas whirled, his armor spattered with gore, and his eyes widened slightly. So many. There were so many of them. Skeletons who had been long dead, fresh corpses recently turned, more of the pale, maggoty abominations thundering down on them. He could sense the panic. They had fought handfuls, but not this, not an army of the walking dead. Arthas thrust his hammer into the air. It flared to glowing life.
"Hold your ground!" he cried,
his voice no longer weak and shaking or harsh and angry.
"We are the chosen of the light. We shall not fall."
The light bathing his determined features, he charged. Jaina was more exhausted than she had admitted even to herself. Drained after the days of fighting with little or no rest, she collapsed after finishing the teleportation spell. She thought she blacked out for a moment, because the next thing she knew, her master was bending over her, lifting her off the floor.
"Jaina, child, what is it?"
"Uther," Jaina managed. "Arthas, Hearthglen." She reached up and clutched Antonidas's robes.
"Necromancers, Kel'Thuzad,
raising the dead to fight." Antonidas's eyes widened. Jaina gulped and continued.
"Arthas and his men are fighting in Hearthglen alone. He needs reinforcements immediately."
"I think Uther is at the palace," Antonidas said. "I'll send several magi there right away to open portals for as many men as he needs to bring."
"You did well, my dear. I'm very proud of you. Now, you get some rest."
"No!" Jaina cried. She struggled to her feet, barely able to stand, forcing the exhaustion back by sheer will alone, holding out a shaking hand to keep Antonidas back.
"I have to be with him. I'll be all right. Come on."
Arthas had no idea how long he had been fighting. He swung his hammer almost ceaselessly, his arms shaking from the strain, his lungs burning. It was only the power of the light flowing through him with quiet strength and steadiness that kept him and his men on their feet. The undead seemed to be weakened by its power, although that seemed to be their only weakness. Only a clean kill. Arthas fleetingly wondered if you could call it a kill if they were already dead, stopped them in their tracks. They just kept coming, wave after wave of them. His subjects, his people, turned into these things. He lifted his weary arms for another blow when over the din of battle came a voice Arthas knew.
For Lordaeron! For the king!
The men rallied at Uther the Lightbringer's impassioned shout, renewing their attacks. Uther had come with a solid core of knights, fresh and battle-hardened. They did not shirk from the undead. Jaina, who, despite her bone weariness, had also portaled in with Uther and the knights, had apparently briefed them sufficiently, so that precious seconds were not wasted in stunned reaction. The undead fell more quickly now, and each wave was met with fierce and impassioned attacks from hammer, sword, and flame. Jaina sank down, her legs giving way beneath her, as the last of the walking dead burst into flames, stumbled about, and fell, dead in truth. She reached for a water skin and drank deeply, shaking, and fished out some dried meat to gnaw on. The fight was over, for the moment. Arthas and Uther had both removed their helms. Sweat matted their hair. She chewed on the meat and watched as Uther looked out over the sea of undead corpses and nodded his satisfaction. Arthas was staring at something, his expression stricken. Jaina followed his gaze and frowned, not understanding. Corpses were everywhere, but Arthas was looking almost as if in a daze at the bloated, fly-riddled body of not one of his soldiers, or even a man, but of a horse. Uther walked up to his student and clapped Arthas on the shoulder.
I'm surprised that you kept things together as long as you did, lad.
His voice was warm with pride, and a smile was on his lips.
If I hadn't arrived just then, Arthas whirled. Look, I did the best I could, Uther.
Both Uther and Jaina blinked at the harsh tone of voice. He was overreacting. Uther wasn't censuring him. He was praising him.
If I'd had a legion of knights riding at my back, I would have...
Uther's eyes narrowed.
Now is not the time to be choking on pride. From what Jaina has told me, what we faced here was only the beginning.
Arthas's sea-green eyes darted to Jaina. He was still smarting from the perceived insult, and for the first time since Jaina had met him, she found herself shrinking a little from that piercing gaze.
Or did you not notice that the undead ranks are bolstered every time one of our warriors falls in battle?
Uther persisted.
Then we should strike at their leader, Arthas snapped. Kel'Thuzad told me who it was and where to find him. It's something called a dreadlord. His name is Mal'Ganis, and he's in Stratholme. Stratholme, Uther. The very place where you were made a paladin of the light. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
Uther sighed wearily.
Of course it does, but I'll go there and kill Mal'Ganis myself if I have to,
Arthas cried. Jaina stopped chewing and stared at him. She had never seen him like this.
Easy, lad. Brave as you are, you can't hope to defeat a man who commands the dead all by yourself. Then feel free to tag along, Uther. I'm going, with or without you.
Before either Uther or Jaina could protest further, he'd leaped into the saddle, yanked his steed's head around, and headed south. Jaina got to her feet, stunned. He'd left without Uther, without his men, without her. Uther quietly stepped beside her,
She shook her fair head. He feels personally responsible for all the deaths, she told the older paladin quietly. He thinks he should have been able to stop this. She looked up at Uther. Not even the Magi have died.